Would you introduce yourself, please?
Hey, I'm Jaguar Jones, and I am from Brisbane, Australia. My mum is Taiwanese, and my dad's Australian, but I am now here as well in Australia. I was born in Japan, though.
So, how are you feeling? You look pretty good.
I'm good. It's early where I am here, so we could time match in all our different time zones. But
I know it's morning.
Yeah, but I feel good. If it's in relation to having to deal with last year and going through COVID, I guess for the listeners, I had COVID last year and I was in hospital for 40 days. But it basically took about 6 months to feel like myself again. And I feel good. I mean, I definitely have a new body where my voice has less endurance. I get fatigued a lot quicker, but I've kind of just accepted it as my new body. And the lesson that it has taught me is to prioritize like self-care and rest and sleep and diet. And ultimately just like loving myself first. So I feel good. Obviously I miss the old body too, but I have learned that I can't keep running on exhaustion and adrenaline. So I love the new version of me who respects that too.
This happened. You were in New York and you were on your way back to Australia and there were no masks back then, right? Nobody knew anything. Do you have any sense of where and how this happened? Were you on a plane or?
I wouldn't know. So I came over to the US tour with my band. We were meant to do, you know, South by Southwest. We did, and like, you know, all these other US shows. We did, however, manage to do three shows in New York. And that was for the new Colossus Festival. Yeah, and so we did manage to do those three, and then the world shut down, and then it took us a while to find flights to come back home. And when I rebooked, finally landed on flights, I booked myself a flight home to Sydney rather than Brisbane, which is where the rest of the band went, and we all live in Brisbane. I booked myself to Sydney because I used to live with my mum, who's a vulnerable, and I felt like I didn't want to, because when you come home, you then self-quarantine. So I didn't want to put my mum at risk self-quarantining for 2 weeks if, you know, I was carrying, especially because New York was such a hotspot then. So I chose to go to Sydney, and then I was the only one with COVID. So it's all speculative. We don't know. I could have caught it on the same flight from New York to LA, but maybe I was the only one that really like took it on. Or just the few hours that I waited a little longer for my flight to Sydney, or literally on my flight back to Sydney. So we don't really know. All we know is like a rough date of when it could be. And then when I landed in Sydney, I got sick pretty immediately. But the amazing thing was we didn't really have infrastructure or systems then on how to deal with everything that was happening. There was no process. So I ticked every single symptom on the criteria, and I took myself to a testing clinic and I said, you need to test me. And they were saying to me, we only are testing people who have been in contact with a positive case because of limited resources. And I'm like, well, if they've been in contact with a positive case, put them in quarantine. The ones you need to catch are the ones who are coming in from overseas, you know, so that you can limit community transmissions. I was saying that over and over again, and they were like, oh no, oh no. And I was like, I literally came from a New York hotspot. I tick all the criteria. Please test me. And they tested me, and I ended up being one of three positives out of the 35,000 that they had tested in the testing clinic. And at the time when, yeah, and they were like, oh, haha, I can't believe we nearly turned you away. And I was just like, well, this is like, this is what needs to happen, because I could then go shopping. And, you know, but It probably wouldn't have lasted long anyway, because a few days after my positive result, my health degraded really quickly, and then I went into under hospital care. So it would have happened, come up anyway, but I feel good that I was really assertive in getting tested, because I am 100% confident that I didn't pass it on to anyone else.
What I really want to get to, because people can read that you're a painter and a designer for brands, that you're a photographer, they can read that stuff. I'm more interested in the fact that you had to learn all this yourself, because your family was not going to let you be. I mean, you're where you came from. It's classical music. It's, you know, you can't do that. You went through, you know, this serious post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, you know, you went through a lot of stuff to become an artist, and yet you had to be self-taught, right? It was by design, by who you are and by your family, you had to be self-taught, right?
Yes. And I think that's a huge makeup to the kind of artist that I am. Like, the industry is really hard, and you have to really try not to compare yourself to other people's journeys, but it's hard not to sometimes. And so you do get insecure about the fact that you're not a technical artist. I'm not a technical artist. But the thing is, the kind of artist that I am is not technical at all. And that's a huge part of why I'm able to express the way I express. And so I have to really try and ground myself back into realizing that being self-taught is what allows me to express myself uniquely and in a complete different way, and to feel, I guess, unbounded, because I don't really know what the rules are. So I try to spin it in a positive way, but it has been a shit to get to where I am now, and I'm sure it will continue to be a shit to get to where I want to be. But for me, I didn't even know it was an option. I didn't know it was a thing that existed. Until, I guess, the pressure inside of me, like the trauma and the pressure and the anxieties, just built up to a place where I didn't know what I could do. I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know where to put it. And I stumbled across music and then eventually art. And it was so cathartic. It allowed me to have a conversation with the person that should matter the most, which is me. There's a helicopter flying over. I'm sorry. But
it's okay. We have a lot of those here in LA.
Awesome. Yeah, and I think from there I realized that music and art gave me passion, and my whole life I'd been living without passion. And once you find passion in your life, it's really hard to go back from that. And so I just thought to myself, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to live life passionately? No, or like without passion? And I was at this crossroad, because I've had a really difficult life. So my priority, like, you know, growing up and studying and, you know, getting a 9-to-5 job, was security, stability, food on the table, shelter. That was my absolute priority. It's like survival. And then I come across passion. And I also think, well, I've had a really difficult life, and I know firsthand that life is short. So why would I live life without passion? So these were the kind of like
the yin and the yang.
Yeah, the yin and the yang of, like, you know, what I was faced with. But it's really hard to beat passion. And I eventually decided to do things smart. So I worked as a business analyst and worked in the music industry right at the bottom to learn about this industry that I wanted to get into. And I just boot camped myself. And eventually, when the risk was minimized a little bit more, I took the leap. And now my goal is to use my passion to get to a place of security, stability, food on the table, shelter.
through the passion, through the crazy stuff.
And slowly I'm chipping away at it, and it's getting closer to that goal. I lost a really close friend to me, and he was an amazing artist. And, you know, growing up, he always said to me, "You are a creative." And I just laughed it off. I was like, "No, I've always just been good at maths and science. Like, that's all I know." And he's like, he was the one that drummed into me that he doesn't want to see me live life without passion, and that I should be exploring these, you know, creative avenues. And it was only until I lost him, someone who I thought I'd spend my life with, someone who meant the world to me, who taught me so much, someone who I loved dearly, that grief that I felt, as well as all the amazing stuff he left in the world, made me realize that if I died tomorrow, I contributed nothing. I contributed nothing that I would be proud of. And so, because I was focused on the wrong things that don't matter in the long run. And so I think that switch flipped where I decided to search for what that would be for me. And I didn't know that it would be music and art, but I just knew that I had to give back into the world in my way and to find passion alongside it. And that's why I just keep experimenting, because I don't feel like it's just concreted in music and art. It's whatever comes my way and resonates with me and allows me to express and connect. And that's what drives me to do what I do. I am surrounded by an amazing bunch of creative, generous, talented people that believe in me as an artist. They are donating their resource and time to me because they understand and want to help me realize my artistic vision. So in that side of things, I've collected an amazing network of help. But in terms of the nitty-gritty grindy stuff, I'm still self-managed. I haven't been able to find...
Are you really?
Yeah. Wow.
You actually did play South by Southwest virtual.
I did.
I watched you. You actually did play virtual South by Southwest. You actually got there.
I did.
Crazy,
I know.
Right?
In a weird way, I got there 1 year later. You know, when I said music became a passion, the real big hook for me was when I told myself I'd just do one gig and it'll be like ticking off a bucket list. And then I move on back to my corporate life. But I played that one gig and it hooked me. That was it. I was like, oh my gosh, the rawness, the intimacy, the connection, the vulnerability, the power. Like, it was just adrenaline even. Like, the whole sensation of it all got me hooked. I love performing. And for me, I still consider it as... a shade of myself. Like, I am still myself, but it's giving myself access to that part that we can't naturally freely, you know, do in everyday life. It's the most honest version of myself, and the most vulnerable version of myself on that stage. But you can't go to the grocery store being your most honest and most vulnerable, you know.
You can, but they kind of look and go,
okay. Fruits and vegetables over that way.
Yeah. What is the filter for a Jaguar Jones song? How do you know it's your song?
I always think, if you don't feel anything after listening to my music, I've done something wrong. I want to make you feel something. And this is because I'm not a technical artist. I came into music because I had something to say and I needed to say it. And this was the only vehicle I learned how to say it the most honestly. And so I always, forever in my entire life, will want to make sure that you're feeling something after you listen to my music. And if it's not a direct emotion that you're feeling, then I want you to feel an attitude. So that's probably my filter.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs is the bread and songs by others in between.